What we're dealing with here,
littering air,
is a complete lack of respect for the law.
And smoke in the reef.
Called the dust pop.
We live in a society of laws.
Dust pop?
Yeah.
No, it's not real.
This thing a weed.
Takes one solid weekend of training to get that bag.
Be phenomenal at your job. Be absolutely the best. Do I think that women are challenged a little bit more as far as performance goes? Probably.
Hello, ladies and gents. Welcome back to the show. This is an awesome interview episode with Carrie Wooten. And when I say that, the last time I had this feeling after an interview was with Mike, our very own Mike the Cop, Police Academy Edition. And that is the most downloaded episode that we have still. So I guess what I'm getting at here is that you can trust me to invest your time to listen to this particular episode. It is worth it. We talk, it's a great conversation. Carrie was so easy to talk to and had all kinds of amazing stuff to say. And that is not blowing smoke. This is for real. It's a great conversation. Carrie Wooten is founder and president of Mindset Enterprise. She is a former police officer and serial entrepreneur. Carrie's on a mission to change how professional development is approached and implemented. And she focuses on personal development of the individual first. And we will talk about that in this interview. Carrie has been hired as a trainer and speaker for law enforcement and corporate executive teams nationwide. And internationally, education organizations use her work in mindset training, organizational culture, and implementation strategies. So needless to say, she is doing a lot. And you'll hear in this interview, she's extremely intelligent. She is a great communicator, and I'm really excited for all of you to hear what we have to talk about in this episode. We get into neurointelligence, some of the scientific research as to why different genders communicate different ways. We talk about, she provides some tips at the very end, and this was not even part of the outline for this interview, but she gets into her gratitude practice and how to, some tips on how to practice gratitude. And of course, we talk about how to be successful as a woman in a male dominated field. And that is, something that I know many of you have been waiting to hear for a long time, what it's like for a woman in law enforcement. But regardless of who you are and what you identify as, this is a great interview, and I hope you all enjoy it. But before we get started, if you're listening to my voice right now, you are not a member of our membership for the Police Academy Podcast Nation over on Patreon. If you're not, then you are missing out, I promise. And as you have maybe noticed at this point, you're a weirdo. Go check out Patreon. Seriously, I love you all, but some of you are weirdos. Go to Patreon, patreon.com. And look up our Police Academy podcast membership program there. At the very least, it's worth checking out the graphics for each of our three tiers, the good, the strong, and the fearless. Let's just say Paul Blart Mall Cop's in there, and we've got some America Hua going on, and also a graphic from one of my favorites, the old Super Trooper. So go check it out. It's at patreon.com/Police Academy Podcast. If you are a member, then you have had access to this particular episode since April 8th, 2020. I do not know exactly when this episode is going to release yet for the rest of our listeners, but it released April 8th for everyone else the day that it was recorded. And that's one of the benefits you get by being a member over at Patreon. You get early access to episodes. You get a chance to win currently a free Badge Life shirt, all kinds of other good stuff. And of course, if you sign up for our top tier, you get the limited edition exclusive Police Academy Podcast First 50 Tumblr. We've sent quite a few out already, and there's only 50 of them. So if you wait too long, you will not get one. Oh, and I almost forgot, but how dare I, because Carrie was so kind as to offer our new members and current members over at Patreon a special gift, but you'll have to wait till the end to hear about that. go check it out. Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N.com, and look up Police Academy Podcast. If you don't, you're a weirdo. Just kidding. You're not a weirdo. But seriously. Carrie, thank you so much for coming on the show and for your time today. We're all in quarantine, of course, but how are you surviving this little pandemic we've got going on here?
Yeah, you know, it's obviously new for all of us, so it's an interesting challenge. I have three kids at home, my oldest being five. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, I'm really grateful for it. I'm getting a lot of extra time with them, and we're just hanging on and taking it day by day like everybody else.
Yeah. And that goes over the heads of a lot of people who don't have kids, but three kids with max age of five is, yeah. is a circus. I'm in the same boat, except my max age is 8.5 right now. So they are a room away. And if you start hearing screaming or any strange noises, that's, from either of us, if you're listening, that's what it is.
Probably. That's right. Yeah. My kids, mine are 5, 3, and 1, and they've developed this gift for saying really inappropriate things all of my Zoom meetings lately, completely out of context. So it's been awesome.
Yes. You need to go unlock that door.
Yeah. It's locked. Double locked.
No, go unlock it.
Oh no.
Come on. Let's keep it interesting.
Yeah.
No, mine are doing the same thing. Especially my 8.5-year-old is our daughter, and then we have two boys. And of course the boys are the ones that think that it's funny to say, you know, certain words, and yeah, so we're in the same boat. We're dealing with the same thing.
Yeah.
So Carrie, just for everyone that's listening, and because this is the first time I've met you personally, kind of give us your background in starting with kind of what led you into law enforcement, and then, just briefly explain your law enforcement career. So we know where you came from.
Sure. So I was not that person who, when I was 5 years old, wanted to grow up and be a cop. There's no law enforcement in my family. And that being said, my family is all military. I have three brothers, all military, my dad, and then I married a Marine. So that servant leadership, you know, sacrifice for others was definitely always ingrained in me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't decide until junior year of college. My undergrad is in psychology and neuroscience, and picked up criminal justice. And I kind of wanted to merge the two and not sit behind a desk. So law enforcement looked like the perfect opportunity. And that's what I did. I said, this is great. I get to use some education. I get to have a really cool, exciting job. I love talking to people. And that's essentially the job of law enforcement, is getting out and talking to people. Mm-hmm. And I applied to one agency. It's the one I wanted. So luckily, they hired me. I didn't have a backup plan. So went into law enforcement. You know, city cop, and I got to do a lot of really cool stuff in a short amount of time, from vehicle patrol to bike patrol to uniform narcotics to special ops, and kind of everything in between. Mm-hmm. And I did 6.5 years, and then things started to change. I'm sure we'll talk about it, and went into entrepreneurship full time.
Nice. So how much do you feel like you used your, because I always recommend when people ask, like, what kind of degree should I get? One of the first that always comes to mind is psychology. Mm-hmm. So how much did you use that in the field as an officer?
All the time. I would say it's probably one of the most applicable degrees you can get. Criminal justice, I mean, I had some exposure as a minor. It's nice because you get used to learning the process and picking up some legal and learning how to read things like that. But psychology, that's where your job lies, right? In dealing with people. Mm-hmm. So really understanding how they think, how they function, where they come from. You know, it's everything. You know, that's step one of conflict resolution, right? Is learning how to talk to people and understand where they're coming from. And I also went into the academy, a large agency, so we had our own academy. And they saw I had a psych degree, and they said, oh yeah, we'll get you through probation, and then you'll be a CIT officer. And you're going to do all the negotiations for CIT. We're going to be calling on you day in and day out. And I did a lot of that. Our psych hospital was in my zone, so I did a lot of CIT work. For those who don't know, crisis intervention. Mm-hmm. So all of your homicidal, suicidal, and barricaded subjects.
Nice.
So I used it every day.
Right. So it makes sense that you got that first pick of departments with that background, because, I mean, and the reason I asked that question is really to confirm a belief that I've held for a long time, and you just said it, that most of what you do as an officer is psychology based. I mean, if you mm-hmm. can understand how people think and why they behave the way they do, you will do well as an officer. And I think anyone who's been in that field for very long and pays attention at all would see that and go, okay, this is a good hire. You know, she's got a background in something that we use all the time. I think it makes you stand out because everyone's got a CJ degree.
Right. Right.
Go ahead.
The legal's the easy part. I mean, yeah, it's important, obviously, but yeah, once you absolutely. Learn it and you read some codes, you've got it.
Right. you learn all that stuff, criminal procedure, criminal law. You learn that in the academy. You learn that in the field during FTO. Yeah, it makes it a little easier, for me, because I did go the normal route, pigeonhole myself into criminal justice. Yeah, mm-hmm. it was just a refresher for me. But even if you've never touched it before, and as long as you have work ethic and can learn things, right? Like that's basic
right.
to be a police officer. You have to be able to be adaptable and learn. You'll be fine because they teach you all that stuff once you get hired.
Exactly. Yep.
So what pushed you out of law, or what drew you? I think that's a better way to put it, because that was kind of how it went for me. What drew you out of law enforcement into professional development?
It was a hard, hard time in my life. So I married a Marine. I knew sooner or later we wouldn't get orders and move. Mm-hmm. So of course we did. And I kind of got that military spouse check in the box of my Marine being gone and I'm moving 8 months pregnant with our first one and trying to get hired and all those fun things that come with marrying the Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the agency that was hiring, right? It wasn't one I was particularly interested in. I went from an agency of 900 officers to an agency of 25, to high crime, to low crime. It wasn't a good fit for me, just as far as the agency and the demographics of the area. Mm-hmm. So I was bored, which didn't help. But what really pushed me out was I got to see all of the poor examples of leadership and corruption and toxicity in one agency, unfortunately, to the point where I was miserable. Mm-hmm. You know, day in and day out, I'm that optimistic, we'll just work hard and everything will be great, we'll serve, everything will be great. And it was breaking me down. I survived it, because that's really what it felt like, mm-hmm. for a little over 2 years. And then I came home one day and my husband turns to me and says, "You're not fun to be married to anymore."
Ouch.
Ooh.
Ouch. That hurts.
Ouch. Yeah. So everyone who thinks that the job doesn't affect them or you don't take it home, we need to get over that. It affects all of us. We've all taken those stresses home back and forth.
And leave it to a Marine to put it in such a right? concise and clear way.
Right. Yeah. That's no military. No feelings with that one.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was my wake up call that I needed. I thought I was managing it well. Obviously I wasn't. So then it was, not only am I miserable at work, but I'm not the spouse I'm supposed to be. I'm probably not the mother I'm supposed to be with two young kids now, with a newborn and a 2-year-old. And I told my chief I couldn't do it anymore. Mm. I said, I cannot. And it was a rough conversation. I said, I love this career. I thought I was going to do it for 20, 30 years. It has nothing to do with the job, but I cannot wear this badge representing this agency and feel like I'm serving with integrity. And that was it. I left, and I'm so grateful that I got to see the worst examples of culture, because I created all of my training from that. It was, if this happens to me, I know it happens across the country. Mm-hmm. How do I proactively teach people to avoid these situations? How do I help leaders not create this culture? And it was my entire driving force that built all of my companies over the last couple of years.
Yeah. So you had a good heart-to-heart with the chief. You were kind of able to unload your feelings on how things were going with that department?
Mm-hmm. And it didn't go well.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. So do you feel like, this is just out of complete curiosity, but do you feel like he was listening and took it to heart, or was he just defensive and didn't want to hear what you had to say?
Completely defensive. Okay. Actually, he told me, this is why we don't hire women, and this is why we don't hire from out of state.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
now we're getting somewhere.
I mean, it was bad. I actually, and the reason I don't mention the agency is because I don't believe in giving power and energy to negative things. Uh-huh. And I'm sure there's some great people who work there, right? I mean, not everyone is bad. I'm sure there's some people serving the community well. But I had criminal charges on my chain of command.
Right.
So that I did not take out. But that's how bad it was. Just to really paint the picture so people aren't saying, oh, you just didn't really like everyone you worked with. It was kind of next level. It was a real eye opener.
Right.
A different lens for me.
No, that makes perfect sense, given that little statement that you just gave from the head of the department, that mm-hmm. I would say that's the place we should start when looking at making a change and changing the leadership of that department.
Right.
So this is one of those rabbit holes I warned you about, but I have to go there. So
let's do it.
You talk about your desire to help leaders find a better way, essentially. And that's me summarizing kind of what you mm-hmm. just said. So as you were saying that, I'm sitting there going, okay, 100%, I'm with you. I'm like, I'm down for that. Like, let's do that. But what about, like, how... Okay, so in government work, if people listening, I know a lot of you want to get into law enforcement or just interested in this topic generally, but just know that in government work, it is very difficult to, shall we say, displace poor leaders or remove poor leaders. So I guess my question is, okay, teaching leaders how to do it better is one thing that we must do. But how do we go about dealing with leaders who are not good leaders, who are toxic, and shouldn't be leaders in the first place? I worked for them. Obviously, you worked for several of them.
Mm-hmm.
This is, again, totally on a tangent, but... like, how do we deal with that? Do you have any recommendations as things that you've seen that worked inside of criminal justice organizations, police departments, and law enforcement agencies that works?
Yeah, 100%. I actually train specifically to this point, so I'm glad you asked. We allow the leaders, the formal leaders, so even your sergeants, but your lieutenants, all the way up to your chief or your sheriff or whoever you're working for, or any industry, right? The men and women at the top. We expect them to carry the entire burden of our organization. And we expect them to make all the decisions. Well, they're the leader, they have the rank, they have the seniority, whatever. When we forget to look at ourselves and say, well, how am I contributing as a leader? It doesn't matter if you've been on for 15 minutes or 15 years. You are the face of that organization. I would say even more importantly, leadership for your new guys, because you're the ones out there with the community. They don't see the chief. They don't see the lieutenants, you know, who are over in admin or, you know, out in special ops. They see the young patrol officers. So it's that taking ownership of your leadership at all ranks, And now you create the culture you want to see. And if you have an entire agency, even, you know, your rank and file, that are doing the right things, that are creating this proactive, positive culture of service, then you can start to really take over, or at least balance out maybe the poor leadership that's higher up. But we need to stop giving all the power to formal leadership, because it's not right. One person should not be carrying the weight of what 500 officers are doing.
So is that, what advice do you give to the leaders who you speak to and work with when it comes to, because if they're on board with what you're presenting to them, mm-hmm. they certainly work with leaders who are not doing a good job,
sure.
who are poor leaders. So what advice would you give to that leader who's mm-hmm. who's kind of taking on your advice, but has to work with someone who isn't willing to listen to that advice and is a poor leader? Is it just,
right.
is it just be a better, influence more from a good leadership standpoint and kind of try to overpower the poor leadership? Or is there a more direct way to deal with that poor coworker?
Right. There are a couple ways. So you can influence more, and you start, I always go back to service. Okay, it's easy. And of course, you know, we have law enforcement and military sitting on this call right now, but remember that you're not just serving your community or your country. You're serving all of your coworkers. You're serving all of those, you know, below and above you. And if you have that poor leader who, let's say, is above you formally, okay, well, how can I serve them? And I would ask myself that every day. How do I make their job easier? What weight can I take from them? How can I level up and give back to that leader? Whether you agree with their leadership style or not, because if you serve first consistently, the positive is going to come back to you. And if, I mean, it'll at least come back, if not tenfold, in my experience. So we have to remember that we are always coming from a place of service, especially when it's hard, right? Or serving those people that we know are just toxic and you're kind of done with dealing with them. Mm-hmm. We don't really have that luxury, because then we are dropping the ball and doing a disservice to everyone else. So it goes back to your ownership. How can I coach this person? How can I serve them to such a high level where they start to see what I'm doing? And that, you know, I take the burdens away from them, and they start to come back and say, how can I lead you better? But it's a long, slow, and possibly painful process. there's no shortcut to getting there.
Absolutely. No, I love that. I think understanding how powerful your positive leadership can impact those you work with and for. I think people undervalue the influence they have on others. They go, well, this is my boss, and there, I'm not going to be able to influence my boss's way of thinking or way of doing things. But the reality is, if you're consistent enough and you demonstrate that your way of leading is effective and better for people, then I'm going to be optimistic here. I would say a majority, at the very least, of people that are paying attention would see that and go, okay, maybe there's something to this.
Right. You just have to be so good at what you're doing that it makes them open their eyes to your positive leadership. I mean, and you've got to be even better. If you could put it on a scale of, this is how I view good leadership, you now need to expect from yourself 10 levels higher. Because the person that is using poor leadership skills, or they have toxic leadership, they really need the extremely obvious, over the top, powerful, positive influence to even wake up. So we need to hold ourselves to such an exceptional standard where we can influence any level of negativity around us. And it's hard work, but if you want to see change and you want things to be better, then it's something you have to do. You have to serve and you have to step up and influence all those around you to do the same.
Yeah. So kind of piggyback on that, I think it's funny because when you work with people who are kind of toward the bottom of an organization, whether you're in law enforcement, military, whatever, they complain all day long about the things they hate about a certain leader.
Sure.
And then they get to that same position or that same rank of leadership and they become the thing that they hated. And mm-hmm. and it drives me crazy. And what I've seen, and I don't think I would have seen it had I not joined the military, but now because the military is so heavily focused on rank. Rank is everything. It doesn't matter what qualifications you have outside of what the military says your rank is. Your rank is everything. So
right.
What I've seen now being in the military is that laziness is, to me, in my humble opinion, probably the predominant factor that takes people who, honestly, if they really thought about it, know what good leadership is and forces them or causes them, I guess is probably the better way to say it, to be a poor leader. And I'll give a simple example. So in the military, you have to clean your facilities. When you are a Joe or like a low-ranking non-leader, you are the one stuck with cleaning. But the second that you become a team leader, a squad leader, you immediately are able to make other people do the work for you. And there's no reason you can't do the work, but you have the rank to tell someone else to do it. So you tell someone else to do it. And it's lazy leadership. And I think that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like a lot of what creates poor leaders is simple laziness, that they get this rank and now they have this authority based on the organizational structure that they're in. And therefore now they can leverage that rank versus earning that leverage on a personal level. If that makes sense.
It does make sense. And I agree with you. I think there's a lot of complacency or lazy leadership. Or that infamous, this is the way we've always done it.
Yes. They oh my gosh.
Do get promoted.
Don't get me started.
They have that. Exactly. They do get promoted and it's a, hey, you're a lieutenant now. This is how we do things. You don't do it the sergeant way. Now, is some of that true? Of course. Right? You have different roles and responsibilities according to your rank and your assignment. You know, your admin lieutenant should not be out answering calls for service or, you know, in the jails, you know, chatting with the inmates. So there's a reason for that, but that's the very formal roles and responsibilities. That's not really how you influence and inspire as a leader. So some of it is laziness. Some of it is lack of good mentors. And I don't think, especially in the criminal justice space, we don't, from an early level, right, from an entry level rookie cop, we don't say, hey, go find yourself a mentor. In the agency, go find the person that you want to be like and ask them how they did it. It's incredibly common in the entrepreneur space.
Yes.
It's pretty common in the corporate space. But that I think is really where criminal justice falls behind because they say, well, we're all trained. We all have rank. We don't need that. No, you need to have those personal connections appropriately. So we know that again, rank, military and law enforcement, it does matter. But it's not everything.
Right.
And so you have to put those systems in place, you know, especially with your FTOs. I think your FTOs are the most powerful person in an organization.
Yes.
Without a doubt, they create and represent the current culture of the agency, and then they teach everyone new coming on. And I'm sure you've been there too. You have a great FTO, you become great. You have a toxic FTO. Or a complacent FTO, you start following what they did.
Yeah.
And they are the single most important person in the agency. They don't get enough credit for what they do. I was in that position. I don't know if you were or not. And it's a tough seat to sit in as a training officer.
Mm-hmm.
But if they do it right and they have mentors and they follow up with those young guys, you start to create these cultural shifts over time that breed excellence from one generation or one rank to the next, but it's got to be everybody. You know, it has to be this organization-wide communication of, this is what we're here to do. This is our mission. This is our vision. This is how we're going to do it to excellence and with integrity, and we're going to continue to develop. But most agencies don't take the time to have those crucial conversations.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you're bringing me back to the days being an FTO. And so the way our department did it was, your first FTO who got to see you as a brand new, just right out of the academy rookie, was also mm-hmm. your final FTO, who was the one who, right. you know, when you get to the very end, they are just a passenger in your cruiser. They don't say or do anything. They just watch to see yep. if you can survive, or if you dig yourself a grave. And yes. that particular FTO that I had, who now I understand and I really get him. He's not a bad officer. He's been on the road for so long. He just doesn't have any drive anymore. But at right. the time, as a rookie, all he did was complain. He was either reading the newspaper or he was complaining about something. And I remember writing a note once I passed FTO. They asked you, like, you know, rate your FTOs and whatnot. And I remember I was like, well, listen, this matters because of what you just said. Because FTOs, they'll tell you, listen, it doesn't matter what they teach you at the academy. You're going to learn what you need to know in FTO. Your FTO sure. will teach you what you need to know. And that is 100% true. They convey the culture of the department, and they can either make you great or they can make you basically worthless and toxic. In this particular right. FTO, because, again, not because he's a bad person, but because of where he was at in his career, was just very negative. And I was honest about that in my review, and I knew he was going to know. It's like, we went through an FTO cycle. Of course, if he gets his feedback, he knows who wrote it. Like, it was me.
Right.
And I had to work with him, and it was fine. You just, like, you have to have the ability to go, listen, I know this could be awkward, but the truth is the truth, and it matters. But yeah, absolutely, 100%. FTOs are they're the cornerstone of any department. They set the pace and the culture for new guys coming in. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you agree with this. I would say, based on my experiences, that younger FTOs, guys that have spent, I would say, less than 15 for sure, maybe even less than like 10 or so and less years on the road, are probably the ones that make the best FTOs, like 5 to 10 years. Would you agree with that?
Just on a cuff? I would say
so. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say so. Now, most of mine were pretty young as well. They kind of sat in that like 12 year range, but they were proactive. They at that point had definitely seen, well, I say definitely seen everything. And then I remember some things I got as a rookie with my FTO, where I was like, and this, they go, oh, I don't know. You're the first one in the history of the agency to get this case. I'm like, perfect. You know, so you get to figure stuff out. But yeah, they've got to be people that still love the job, right? And right. want to not count down to retirement. And I get to have this conversation a lot because I just started training all levels of law enforcement. My first year or so, I was just training command and staff programs, and I get to train a lot of the chief and sheriff's conferences. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting, the top, right? And the 25, 30 years experience. And there's a lot of great knowledge and wisdom there, of course. But I also have to bring them back to, hey, go back 15 years, go back 20 years. Like, this is who's in your agency, and they need to remember what it was like. Where if you're FTO, obviously they're still in patrol if they're an FTO, but if they've been doing it for 20 years, maybe they're not as motivated. Some are. I had some with that many years on. But yeah, they've got to love the job, and they've got to want to create the next generation so they can say, hey, I'm 5 years from retirement, but because of how I'm training guys right now, this agency is going to be better than it was when I was here. And they need to have that kind of mentality of, how do I create a better agency for when I'm gone.
I think that reaches out to so many different levels in the law enforcement community. But speaking to those rookies, if you're listening right now, you're going to the academy, you're in the interview process, whatever it is. When you hit FTO, you need to be cognizant of who your FTO is. If they are that 20-year officer and they aren't motivated, realize that they're going to give you a bunch of bullshit and that the only thing that you'll be able to get from them is probably some nuggets of wisdom, because they do have inherent built-in wisdom that comes from that time on the street. But you have to take what they say with a grain of salt, take their negativity and brush it off, and you take the good that they can offer, which is that wisdom, but realize that if they are that old, we call it our retired on duty officer, then you got to take a lot of what they say with a grain of salt and just brush it off. Hopefully you get some good FTOs who are still motivated and care about you as an individual and care about creating good officers for the organization. So because I look back to when I was a rookie, I didn't know. Like, I'm just like, this guy's been on the road for 20 years. Like, everything he says is probably true. Like,
it's true, you know.
So you're somewhat gullible, or at least I was in those shoes. And then you look back years later and go, okay, like, all right, well, now I see where he's coming from, and I shouldn't have listened to this. You know, you can list off the different things that FTO taught you that you should have probably just ignored. Because it came from a place of frustration, of cynicism, fatigue, et cetera. So
yeah, I agree.
sorry for hijacking the interview.
No, I would love to just sit and listen. Go for it.
Yeah, no. So you focus with the work that you're doing now. You like to focus on personal development of the individual first. So. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean? As opposed to what? If it's not the individual, what if an organization is making a mistake and not focusing on the individual, what are they focusing on?
So when you're in the professional development space, and this isn't even industry specific, this is everywhere, because I get to do some corporate training and things like that too. Department of Education, I kind of have my hands in a lot of different things, but I do the same training. Law enforcement is the most fun for kind of obvious reasons, but they're also my most challenging as well. So there's a lot of fun dynamics there, as you're well aware of.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we take on professional development, and most of the time everyone says, oh, well, it's your in-service, it's your skills, it's, you know, your hard skills. Well, the challenge is in law enforcement, you don't have cops who are getting fired or getting hung up because they don't know how to handcuff or they don't know how to shoot. I mean, you can teach everybody how to do those things, right? You can teach anyone how to drive. And I mean, some people are a little more gifted than others, but really you can teach them the hard skills. What you can't teach is character. Mm-hmm. What you can't teach right away is drive, is intrinsic motivation. And those are the things that are actually the underlying problems to everything else. You know, when you have toxic leadership, well, is it because they lack skills? Well, probably not, because depending on their level, they've gone through formal leadership schools, right? And you get high enough, they've gone to FBI NA or Northwestern Command and Staff, or I have a command and staff program. They've done all of that. But if they don't have the personal foundation, if they don't have formal mindset training, if they don't have a personal mission and vision, why do I get up in the morning? Why am I even here serving? What's the point? Then they can't correctly implement all of those other skills. I mean, you can read every book under the sun by traditional leadership influencers like Dale Carnegie and John Maxwell. But if you don't know how to create new habits, it doesn't matter how much you read. So you've got to go back to that personal foundation of, hey, we're not just creating successful officers with a skill set and knowledge. We're trying to develop good people. We want them to have this kind of character. We want them to have these good habits. We want them to be driven. And then they apply all of the necessary knowledge and skills to do the job. But the stuff like driving, handcuffing, I mean, yes, they're important. Law, obviously important. But again, you can teach it to anybody. And that's not where we're having the issues. And that's not where toxic leadership comes from. That's not where a dysfunctional culture comes from. It comes from the people. So if we learn how to become better people and we level up, then when we put on our uniform, we're serving better.
Okay, so the focus is more on, I'm just trying to make sure I'm understanding this right. The focus is more on the individual person's their traits and developing their character versus just giving them, hey, this is giving them actual like physical skills. Is that right?
Yeah. So if we can get officers to be more self-aware and to self-reflect and to go back to the reasons of why they're even risking potentially their life every day, you know, what's the purpose? If we can get them to focus and train to that, then they become better friends and better spouses, which we know law enforcement does not have a very high, you know, I guess it does have a high divorce rate, right? Mm-hmm. We know that there are stress on relationships, working shift work, having kids. We're aware of all of that. That's before you even get into the mental health challenges.
Right.
We create these people who have true servant hearts, who have performance mindset skills, who, you know, build resiliency day in and day out, then they can be effective leaders. Mm-hmm. But if they don't have that personal foundation, if you don't have a foundation, eventually you crumble. So that's when you get the guys who have been doing it for 20 years, right? They've got the skills. They obviously got promoted. They did something, but their relationship is in ruins, or they're not available for the kids, or they're miserable and they're drinking off duty most of the time, because we know that's also an issue in law enforcement, then they can only lead so well, because look at the place it's coming from. You know, they will plateau their leadership skills based on what they have read or have been taught in a school, and they won't get to develop to their full potential.
So would you say your primary focus or your starting point is character development?
Is that character development?
I don't want to put you in a box. I'm just trying to make sure I'm grasping this.
No, you're good. You're good. When I train, one of the first things we focus on is personal mission, vision, and values. Mm-hmm. And the guys really struggle with it because they start to write their agency's mission. So that's not what I asked. Mm-hmm. Because for the most part, the mission statements are all the same, right? Something about integrity, service, and community, which as it should be. But I said, well, when you wake up tomorrow and you don't have a job, because that's a reality in law enforcement, you get hurt or something and you're now retired, you know, either medically retired or eventually you do retire. You wake up and you don't have a job, or your kids are now grown. Why are you getting up in the morning? Mm-hmm. And it hits them so hard. I said, you've got to know what your purpose is as an individual, because that's how you become an asset to your agency. If you're just floating and going through the ranks, you can have a successful career and you can serve people and do well,
right?
But not to the level that you potentially could. So what is your mission? What do you envision for yourself? If it's to serve your community, well, okay, your job will help you do that,
right?
But how do you do it? What are your values? And then they come from a place of intrinsic motivation of, hey, I'm getting up today because I have this personal mission, this thing that I have to do. This is what I was created to do. And now law enforcement is the vehicle to help me get there. But if the job is everything, when you don't have the job anymore, that's when you start to break. That's why you have guys who retire or leave law enforcement and go through identity crisis.
Right.
You know, or all that PTSD, it finally surfaces. And now you get that ridiculously high suicide number, you know, 242 or whatever it was in 2019, because we're not proactive with developing the person when they're already stressed out enough just because of the profession.
Right.
So it's a lot of that personal work. So they have something grounded to come back to at the end of the day.
That's awesome. Just the older I get, the more I see that one of the greatest mistakes that most people make is they lack to be introspective. And it sounds like you are helping officers go look inside themselves and figure out who they are and why they do what they do. And you mentioned that not only, well, you mentioned that they'll perform better for their department, but then you basically explain this, but I really want to highlight that this point for our audience that not only by understanding why you get out of bed in the morning, are you going to help your agency, but you're actually going to be living. If you don't know why you get out of bed every day and you just go to work and you're a robot, you're not living. There, I know, because we do have, we have current officers, we have veteran officers, we have retired officers, and this applies to everybody. I know there are people listening who don't know why they're getting out of bed. So if that's you, pay attention and start thinking about these things. Ask yourself why you do what you do. What is your drive? What are you trying to accomplish with your life? Okay. So I just wanted to throw that in there with and jump on the back of what you just said, but I want to ask you about informal versus formal leadership. But first, are you one of the good, the strong, or the fearless? Now, those are the different Police Academy Podcast Nation membership levels over at patreon.com. Now, these different tiers allow us to include just about everyone. That's why we created multiple levels. If you just want the show to go on, the good is the tier for you. The monthly pledge is so small, you're not really going to notice it in your budget at all. It's less than one cup of coffee a month and gives you access to special promotions and giveaways as well as our main chat channel. Now, if you want more content, more benefits, more cowbell, then you have two options in the strong and the fearless tiers. Of course, if you want one of our exclusive bestest of all beverage vessels, you must be one of the fearless. But don't take my word for it. Go see for yourself at patreon.com/policeacademypodcast. Go ahead, give it a try. You can cancel at any time and we won't hold it against you. Well, at least not for too long. Be one of the good, the strong, the fearless. Patreon.com. All right. So informal versus formal leadership. Please explain to adults like me what we're talking about so we actually know what we're talking about here.
Right. So your formal leadership is basically your rank structure.
Okay.
Right. But we also know that, and we've all seen it, you can't be a corporal on Friday or an MPO or whatever rank structure you have, get promoted, and then come in as a sergeant on Monday and know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And we have, the military does it too. I know that it's crazy. And we say, well, obviously you know how to lead. Well, it's not like this magic thing that happens when you pin a different rank. Mm-hmm. It's always developing. And like I said before, it's that the informal leadership is that leadership at all ranks. When you are, take the brand new rookie cop, okay, mm-hmm. even either during FTO or his first day out, right? First day out with on FTO. Well, he is a leader. He is the first responder. He's making those decisions. He's the one that whoever is in need sees first, and you've got to lead that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how it worked with you, but for us, it didn't matter what rank showed up. And when we were big, pretty much you just got your, you know, your zone buddy and maybe a sergeant if you needed it for whatever reason. But the sergeant didn't take over the case. They were there for whatever you needed, but it didn't matter if you had a minute on, you were the one leading. And I had some big critical incidents that, I mean, I had, unfortunately, there was like a huge command and staff meeting going on down the road. So the chief and everyone else showed up and I had to lead them, you know, mm-hmm. not let them in my scene and everything else. And how those challenging times of, you know, I know that you're a formal leader, but you guys come across that tape right now, you're going to have to go on the report and go into evidence custody, you know? chain of custody. Of course, they backed up real quick, right? They said, oh, right. We don't want that.
Yeah.
But you've got to be aware of it's beyond rank. Rank isn't everything. Yes, it's important. There's a reason for it. You need to follow procedures and forms of communication. Yes, do that. Do not be a young officer and say, hey, I heard a podcast. Kerry Wooten said I can do whatever I want. Doesn't matter if I'm a rookie and I've got a lieutenant talking to me.
Right.
Right. Don't do that.
Always respect the rank.
Always respect the rank. Right. Yep. Okay. Don't get yourself in trouble. But also know that you need to own your own leadership space at every single level. And everyone can be a leader. And even if you are brand new or you've got 15 years on, but maybe you chose not to promote, hey, you're leading everyone around you. So take ownership of it and make sure you're doing those around you. You're giving them good service, right? You are being a positive influence. You are being helpful. You're serving them. You're asking questions. What can I do for you? That's how you lead informally, and you do it at all levels.
Right. Yeah. Leadership. Some people get twisted. They think that, oh, because I'm a leader, I don't have to follow anybody. Or because I'm following a leader, I can't be a leader. But you are always doing both at the same time. You're always, right. You should always be following somebody, especially when you're in a criminal justice organization or military. You have no choice. There's always someone in charge of you. It's very, very rigid. But just because you have a boss doesn't mean that you aren't leading those around you, even if they're at the same level. That's just that's just human nature. I love what you're saying there, because I think that people, yes, respect the rank, but also recognize that your attitude and your character is what other people look at and either respect or they don't. It's not intuitively, human beings will look past rank and see what you are bringing to the table. And if you're bringing confidence and character to the table, they're going to respect that, and you will naturally begin to lead them regardless of what their rank is. You can influence people even above you in the organization. And I see that right now with being where I'm at, being an older guy coming brand new into the military. Most of my leaders are way younger and less experienced at life than I am. So it's really easy for me to see this. But it's important for people to understand, listen, rank, being formal leadership is not the same thing as inherent individual, you know, personal leadership. And you can lead from wherever you are.
Yeah, 100%.
How do you deal with someone who has rank? Let's put it this way. How do you deal with someone who has the rank, but doesn't have the personal, the informal leadership skills?
Right. Well, then you lead them. It goes back to everyone taking ownership. And how can you serve that formal leader? I'll give you a personal example. I was on just a couple years, I think just 2 years, and I was requested. We did a shift change every 6 months, and you would do a shift bid. I had a supervisor, I had a sergeant request that I come to his squad at shift change. I never worked for him before. I was actually a bike unit at the time that was in vehicle patrol. And he said, hey, are you going to put in for my squad? Are you going to put in? And he was like trying to sell me his squad, basically. Mm-hmm. And again, we had crossed paths with some overlap, but not really anything else. And everyone said, don't go to that squad. He does not think women should be cops. I said, well, I don't believe that. Why would he ask me? Personally, I mean, came to me more than once and put in a written request to his leadership to make sure I went to his squad. Mm-hmm. I said, well, why would he do that? Turns out he was just happy with something I did, right? We had a big incident and he happened to show up and he was impressed that I handled it, how I handled it. And then I did it with a bike, not with a rolling billboard. Mm-hmm. So he was happy. That's cool. I said, well, yeah, I'll go there. Someone who wants me, who already sees me as an asset. What a great person to work for. And after that, he followed me on every call I went to. It was constant. He showed up constantly. Everyone said, oh, he's trying to gather information. He's looking for something to hold above your head. I mean, and I just didn't see it. I didn't understand. And then I said, well, what does he need? I said, he was a new sergeant. I think he missed being on the street. It was hard for him to accept his new formal role and not being involved. Mm-hmm. So I said, how can I serve him? How can I now lead informally? How can I serve? And he wanted to know everything. So before I made any decisions, hey, Sarge, I'm going to go do this. Is that cool? What do you think? Now I knew the answer. I knew what I was, these weren't, you know, difficult things.
Right.
Okay. That I was calling about. They weren't necessarily things you should be calling a sergeant for.
Right.
But he needed it for whatever personal reason. Everyone said, no, he's playing you. You better watch out. You better watch out. Everyone who painted him with this toxic paintbrush, and it for 2 weeks. Every single thing I did for 2 weeks. Hey, Sarge, I'm going to go do this. Hey, what do you think? After that, he opened up to me and he said, hey, I appreciate you going above and beyond. I wasn't micromanaging because I thought you lacked skill. He said, there's a reason I wanted you on this squad. He said, that's not it. He goes, but I did. I wanted to be involved. I liked the way you were handling these cases. He literally just wanted to see and learn and kind of live vicariously through what I was doing because he missed it. And he said, I appreciate you taking the time. After that, I'm telling you, I got everything I wanted. I got every training request. I got every special assignment. I was living the good life. And I only had 2 years on. Okay, talk about no seniority. Okay, a couple people under me.
Yeah.
And I mean, he put in requests, everything that came out. Hey, I think Carrie should do it. Hey, I think Carrie should do that. This is a big, again, large agency, you know, there are 900 of us. Mm-hmm. I got everything. So if we informally can lead, look at, okay, as people, not what does this sergeant need, but maybe what does this person need? Why is he doing this?
Right.
Okay, I know it's not because he lacks confidence because he asked me to be here. He already values me.
Mm-hmm.
So I served him first. And again, it came back to me tenfold and everything was great. But if we don't take the time, was it inconvenient? Yeah. Was it a little annoying that I had to do it? Did I feel like I was checking with the babysitter? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Can I set my ego aside and then say, hey, I get to lead informally right now and serve him while serving my community? Hey, it's a win-win. Yeah. But we've got to take ownership of that and allow ourselves to lead even when it's not obvious of maybe how we should.
That's awesome. So someone told you prior to going there that this supervisor, this leader, does not think that women should be police officers.
Mm-hmm. More numerous people. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about that because he's not the only one that said that. And I've had quite a few questions. And to those of you who have asked these questions, apologize for how long it's taken to get a guest on the show to talk about this. But let's talk about being a woman in law enforcement. And then, but first I want to talk about gender specifically, because this is obviously a thing that a lot of people don't agree on these days. So I want to see kind of get the foundation where you land on these things. And then we'll talk about women in law enforcement. So where do you fall on the gender identity spectrum? Is gender linked to biology or to sex, or is it just a cultural creation? We can be whatever we want to be.
My personal views are that there are two genders. There's male and female. We are created as such to reproduce and continue creating humans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I think thought processes, and we'll go into it, and leadership, do I think there's a spectrum of how our brains work? Male to female, yes. But when I think of it, hey, you know, we're talking about gender. I just think of the two very simple, you know, anatomically correct men versus women.
Okay. So is that because you feel that gender is inherently linked to biology, or is it just for simplicity's sake?
I think both. Obviously, I think it was created out of biology. We all know why there are male and female versions of every species, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, I don't think it should put us in a box, but I think a lot of that has changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can go from traditional gender roles to, you know, you can take the 1950s version, right, of women in the kitchen, you know, here's an advertisement for how to mop your floor so your husband loves you, to now, where everyone's kind of dual income, lines are blurred, mm-hmm. you know, there are stay-at-home dads now, you know, there's a lot more gender role flex, mm-hmm. I'd say, between the two.
So
that's your cultural.
Yeah. So what do you, what key traits do you see that come from the two different gender identities? I guess the reason I ask is, I want to identify some traits because we're going to talk about how they interact with each other.
Yeah. So I do a lot of research and training in this part. It's called neuroleadership, and it's literally merging the neuroscience mm-hmm. with gender intelligence. So what do we know about men and women? And I like researching and training this piece from a psychological and physiological, very scientific point of view, because people are already subjective, mm-hmm. right? And this takes my opinion out of it. And I think if we can understand the scientific reasons why do men communicate this way? Why do women communicate that way? Then all we have to do is understand the other one and I'll start to communicate. That's the biggest issue, right? It's the communication barrier. Anyone who is in a relationship or who has worked for a supervisor of the opposite gender, you've seen that just in gender differences.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding our brains are different. Again, I do a lot of the research and training on this piece, and that directly applies to how we lead, how men and women communicate, how we react hormonally, how we react to stress, which of course is huge in this field. Understanding those differences, and you let me know if you want me to go into the science behind it, or skip over that. But understanding those differences, so then we actually learn how to leverage the other gender instead of criticize and isolate the other gender.
Perfect. 100%. I'm with you. Like, realizing we're all different and highlighting each other's strengths and instead of pointing at our weaknesses. So yeah, absolutely. Go into the science a little bit. I would love to hear that.
Sure. Okay. So first example, men and women, right? The front portion of our brain, I'll spare all the, you know, specific jargon on it, mm-hmm. but controls your communication, right? Your communication, your emotions. Men versus women. Hey, women have so much, they have more blood flow, okay, that goes to their brains than men do. Okay, some men get very upset when I say this. It's not critical. It's just the way it is, all right? More blood goes to a woman's brain than a man's, okay? Don't be upset. That being said, this is why women are constantly thinking. This is why they do 15 things at once. This is why when you lay down at night with your spouse, the husband falls asleep basically before he hits the pillow and the wife is like, hey, honey, I want to talk. Let me go ahead, right?
Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, exactly. It's because blood is still pumping to our brain, which mm-hmm. means our brain has to do something, right? There's okay. more neurotransmitters. It has to function, which is why women talk so much, which is also why this is a good example. When, whether it's a significant other or if it's professionally, you text. I can text a woman with a question and get a 2-paragraph response.
Mm-hmm.
I can text the exact same thing to a man and get a, okay.
Yeah.
And that's it, right? Uh-huh. Yeah. And women get upset. Well, okay. What does that mean? Do you agree with me? Is it not enough? Do you need more information? And we ask 1,000 questions trying to decipher why this was so simple. Oh, it was way too simple. He must not have even read it.
Oh gosh.
And, right? Yeah. Now you're seeing
yes,
it. You're
and,
seeing it
now. And me as the guy is going, simplify, just simplify.
Exactly. Because literally women have to use more words. Uh-huh. They cannot express those thoughts as concisely as men. Men do not, having a little less blood flow, do not have the, I don't want to say have the capacity. It sounds bad, but if everyone can be open-minded for a second. Okay. They are not going to use as many words. It's not how their brain turns thoughts into words where a woman it is. We want to use 15 words to say the same thing.
Right.
I get it in emails. I get it all the same. For me, it's funny because I can look and say, I know that email came from a man, or I know that email came from a woman without even reading the name at the bottom.
Right.
I can tell. So, but that's huge for leadership. Hey, women want more words for it to feel connected, to feel involved, to feel like you want their input. Mm-hmm. You have to use more words and give more detail. Women, when you're leading men, don't give them a dissertation. Say, I need you to go from A to B. Got it? Good. Okay.
Right.
And we move on. But we can see where if we don't understand that about each other, why people get offended, why they feel left out, why they don't feel like they're being heard in meetings or in leadership opportunities. Mm-hmm. And it's just a difference. It is what it is. Mm-hmm. Nothing we can do about it. So we just learn it and then leverage it.
Right.
You know, more often your PIO officers, your public information, a lot of them are women because they want to talk and they want to connect.
Yeah.
You know, there's a reason for it. There's a reason. I mean, news anchors, you know, there are more men now, but the ones that are giving those connecting stories, they're usually women.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they communicate. There's a reason for it. And stress, the one big difference I also want to go into real quick is stress.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We know that on the job, you're pretty much at a certain level of stress all day. And of course, it fluctuates depending on what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Men and women hormonally react to stress in two very different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also huge for how you lead. When men are stressed, they release testosterone. The more stressed, the more testosterone. Of course, that creates aggression and they cannot communicate if testosterone gets high enough. Okay, think primal with me. Okay, they're supposed to protect, defend, right? This very primal, innate nature for men. Mm-hmm. That's what men are built for. Then they literally cannot have conversations with you. That's why when you have an argument, take a heated argument with your spouse. I use my husband as an example all the time when I train. And it's when we argue. Okay, while rare, we're both very type A personalities, though. When we argue, he wants to be done. He wants to walk away, and he cannot communicate if he's stressed enough. Where if he walks away, what do I want to do? I want to follow him and say, hold on, we're not done talking yet. Come communicate with me. I need more.
Yeah.
That's because when women are stressed, we release oxytocin. When we release that, it's the connecting hormone. We want to salvage and build relationships. So apply it to law enforcement. When men are stressed, they need to separate and debrief. Mm. When women are stressed, they want everyone to come together and discuss it.
Interesting.
Because that's what our bodies are telling us to do.
Yeah. So I've never heard the blood flow. I've never heard anybody talk about that. So that's that's interesting. How much of it is, and obviously many things can be true at once. So blood flow differences affect the way men and women think, but how much of it is also just simply that our brains, from a physiological level, right? Like from mm-hmm. the ground up are built differently and operate differently. Because like when you're talking about the different communication styles, my natural based on what I understand of like how our brains work, my natural instinct is go, okay, needing to talk more to convey feelings and understand what's going on inside is like more right brain thinking versus, mm-hmm. being more concise and already having come to terms with what you believe before communicating, it tends to be more left brain. Right. So, and correct me if I'm wrong here anywhere, but how much of it is blood flow differences and how much of it do you think is just actual physical structural differences in the way that, or at least the way that our brains operate?
Right. It's a combination and you don't have, yes, there are physiological differences, but as far as how you communicate, how you think, how you feel,
mm-hmm.
All of those things going on, think of it as a spectrum. You have the male brain over here, the female brain over here, because you can have cultural influence there, right? I know that I'm a little more male brained than female. Now, I know I talk a lot, but it's okay. I'm a speaker now, so I just monetized what I already do.
Right.
So I just learned to leverage it. But I grew up in a military household with three brothers, became a cop surrounded by men, right, and then married a Marine. Mm-hmm. So I have always been around men. And I have friends, I have business partners that tell me all the time, they say, yeah, well, you don't count because you just think like a dude. So they ask my perspective. They go, yeah, but our wives would never say that, or whoever would never say that because you think differently. And it's great self-awareness for me because I've actually been told I'm really good at talking to men. And I had someone recently tell me, I have a team internationally that's all women. They go, you've got to learn how to talk to women better. I said, really? I said, well, we're talking business. It's just very objective. It's A to B. I'm very task oriented.
Yeah.
I said, I'm just trying to get things done. And they go, yeah, but you got to have some feelings in between.
Oh,
I'm like,
gosh.
Oh my gosh, I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
So I mean, there are differences culturally and personality as well. But if we know the basics, hey, overall, you may have women that do this and they'll lead this way. You'll have men who are, if they're heavily male brained, not female brained, they will communicate and lead this way. It's not right or wrong. It's just different. But if we can be aware of it and learn how to leverage it, you take a lot of those frustrations and conflicts over communication
right
out of the picture. And it's just one step. It's one step getting us closer to effectively communicating and co-leading.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you listening, if you don't fit, just as Carrie was just saying, she thinks more in using the terms that we're kind of operating right now, like thinks more male oriented. If you don't fit into what we're saying here, then that's fine. We're speaking in generalities so that we can identify trends that apply to the different genders. And that, so that when you're in that meeting or dealing with that coworker, supervisor, subordinate, whatever, you can identify, okay, we may not be connecting because I'm not speaking their language and they're not speaking mine. In this case, based on gender. So to that point, I'm going to ask this from both directions, but first, what can guys in the law enforcement, well, in general, but in law enforcement as well, what can they do better when working with a female coworker, a female officer? Give some tips as to the guys out there who struggle with working with females.
Yeah. So understand that if you are married or have a girlfriend, you probably know this, women just need more. They're higher maintenance. They do need more. They need more communication. They need more detail. They want to, they need to multitask because our brain pushes us to do it. At the same time, they're easily distracted. So if you have a woman doing 10 things, she's thriving, ask her to do 11. And she says, can't you see I'm already doing 10 things, right? There's a reason for it. It's the way their brains work. Understand that women in law enforcement, it's either easy for them or it's not. You know, this whole, how do you join the boys club? How do you move in? I literally had no issues. It's harder for me to befriend women because I've never been around them. I mean, that's it. It's how I was raised. It's what I went into. It's easier for me to communicate and be around men. I had to learn the other way. So I didn't need the reassurance coming to law enforcement. So those who are there, you know, do they have all brothers? You know, do they have military backgrounds? Look at where they're coming from.
Yeah.
It's going to be easy for them to kind of join the boys club. You get a female officer who comes in who was raised by a single mom and all sisters. This is completely foreign territory to that officer. And she's trying to figure out, how do I fit in? How do I make sure I'm heard? And are they looking at me as a female cop or are they just looking at me as a cop? Mm-hmm. And they're trying to figure it out. Where I don't think, yeah, men, when you come in, you want to fit into the culture, you want to find the right people, but at least the gender piece is out of the way.
Right.
You're not trying to cross that communication. So yeah, man, just understand that there is an extra challenge for women, and don't assume that if you get a female officer, you're like, this is easy. She fits in great, but this one doesn't. Why? Maybe their backgrounds are different.
Yeah.
You know, go ahead and ask, learn about them, and then see how you can help. At the end of the day, everyone just needs to be great at their job.
Right. What about, so for a female officer who may not be so, for you, probably more so than most, it was relatively easy to kind of fit into that male dominated culture because of your background. So for an officer, mm-hmm. a woman who's coming into law enforcement who doesn't have that background is more the stereotypical, thinks more stereotypical, as a woman, mm-hmm. What advice would you give them as far as being able to work well with their peers and in that environment without losing who they are while still being true to mm-hmm. themselves?
Sure. Be phenomenal at your job.
Okay.
Be absolutely the best. Do I think that women are challenged a little bit more as far as performance goes? Probably, but I don't think it's necessarily wrong either. My first agency, we did not have our PT standards were universal. We didn't have male and female performance, simply mm-hmm. because they were able to say, hey, when you hit that street, you're blue. It doesn't
right.
matter because the fights are going to happen. And they're right. absolutely right. So I'm glad that they came from that place of you're blue. So you all need to be trained and be equally capable. Women, does that mean physically you're going to have to work harder? Yeah, it mm-hmm. does. It's the nature of the job, but it's for your benefit, right? It's to make sure that you can be backup and make sure that you don't get hurt. It's for you. So you have to look at it that way. I have learned, and I actually reached out to some old friends last night, Terrence, when I knew you were going to ask me this question, I said, hey, what was my reputation? Like, I have decent self-awareness. I said, but let me double check real quick. You know, what was my reputation? And I had one, he's got about 30 years on, one friend of mine, and we worked together on the street. And he goes, you weren't really seen as a female cop. He goes, you were just seen as a cop because you quickly outworked people. He said, and when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, it's the hardest worker and the best team player everyone wants to be around. It's not mm-hmm. whether they're a man or a woman. You've just got to be phenomenal at mm-hmm. what you're doing. So ladies, you are going to have to work harder, but take it as a blessing. Be grateful for it because it just means that you are going to be better. You'll be more effective mm-hmm. in your career. So go ahead and take it and run with it.
That's interesting that you say that. You're kind of bringing back some memories because I have done shows on this before and giving my perspective as a man in that career field. And that was the advice I gave. Like, you just know that you have to work harder. So it's interesting that you're saying the same thing. But how do you work hard in law enforcement? At least in my department, we would refer to people as a hard charger or an officer as a hard charger if they were like getting after it, really working hard, making things happen on the street. So how do you be a hard charger as a newer female officer without being stigmatized as, and this is an example, so everybody chill out, but being stigmatized or called a quote unquote bitch?
Sure. So what I've learned is the best way to go about it is instead of focusing on how to prove yourself, focus on how you're improving. And that's not even just for women in law enforcement, but everybody improve, not prove. Because the more energy you put in trying to prove that you should be viewed gender neutral, or you're trying to prove and stand out, you're not going to be seen in a positive light. Yeah. Especially in the law enforcement space, because everyone can see through it. So if you can really focus on that, then I think you'll be fine. And come from a place of service. You know, I mean, your personality is what it is. I mean, I'm just kind of a happy, smiling person. So I wasn't seen that way. And like I said, I did check. I called some people yesterday to check my self-awareness. And they said, no, you are always smiling, like you are helpful. And if you can just come from there, you can be a hard charger and it won't be, oh, she's out there trying to prove herself, but she really is a bitch. She's just trying to fit in. It'll be, hey, that's a good cop, you know, or that's a good correctional officer. You know, they're really putting in the work and the energy and they're going places. And then you'll start to eliminate the gender. It won't matter anymore.
Right. No, I think that's a good point. Whether you're male, female, people will see you as a try harder. So it's how I've heard it a lot. If all you care about is putting up numbers and, you know, you can't shut off the hard charger and just be a normal person. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's part of it. Obviously there's a lot of nuance when it comes to men and women working together in the workplace, but, I'm sure that's part of it because women have to, I think inherently especially when they come into, a male dominated field, they know that kind of all eyes are on them and that they've got to prove themselves. And so I guess I'm kind of, just thinking out loud here, but I can't help but wonder how much of the, oh, she's a bitch. She's, you know, this stigma of like, being a try harder is applied to women because they really are just focused so much on trying to prove themselves, and are unbalanced, I guess, in that effort, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Right. I'm thinking out loud completely right now.
No, it does make sense. You're right, because people can see if you are, like I said, just trying to prove yourself. If you're just trying to get your numbers and you're being social, you've got to fully integrate into the culture, right? To be a team player, to, you know, build the trust of the guys that you're working with. Going to, you know, if your squad hangs out after shift or whatever, make sure you go. Even if it's uncomfortable or hard for you, make sure you do that and you integrate yourself into that culture if you truly, genuinely want to be part of it. Mm-hmm. And even that, socially, understand that men are a little different. We'd go and do our squad thing. Like, yeah, we're all going to hang out. Well, it meant that we went to a bar and they watched a game and didn't talk to each other. I was like, oh, this is painful. You know, but because I was there, they're like, oh yeah, you're one of us. You're part of the team. I just had to kind of put what I needed and what I thought was social aside and give my squad what they needed. Cause I was the minority, right? I was a token female everywhere I went. Mm-hmm. So yeah, be you. I mean, don't fake it cause everyone can see that, but you have to find a way to work your ass off and know that you will probably always be expected to work your ass off, but then don't tell people how hard you're working.
Yes.
I mean, it's obvious saying it out loud, but don't tell people and don't draw attention to it. Just kind of like just quietly go be awesome.
Right.
You know, everyone else will see what they need to see. Just go do it and don't worry about it so much. The more time and energy you put into how am I going to fit in? What do they think? You know, I want to lead, but I don't want to be too hard. I mean, I want them to take me seriously, but I don't want to be a bitch. Women, calm down. Just go be great. Go be awesome at your job. And the guys working with you are smart. They're smart. They're experienced. They know what it takes to be good at your job. They'll take it in and they will see it. So you just go, like I said, go and be great. Go work your ass off and no one can say anything about it.
Yeah. So, for my listeners to try to kind of summarize what you just said, would you agree that, to put it concisely, that it's work hard, but be personable and connect with people? Is that kind of it in a nutshell?
Yeah. Enjoy it. I mean, this is a fun job. If you got into it, and you're already in it, or you're looking at it, and it is fun, but it is definitely, you make the job,
right?
Right. You can either be bored because you're complacent. You can have all the fun stuff because you're proactive and you can get the cool assignments you want. You can have that true brother and sisterhood right? There's nothing else like it other than the military, where people will literally, jump in a gunfight for you.
Yeah.
Right. And they truly have your back when it matters most. Right. I mean, this industry is, it's special. It really is. And it's a great one to be involved with. But it's hard. It's challenging. It's stressful. It's ever changing. So you've got to be ready for it. So you've got to be balanced. If you're just, let me prove how hard I can work, and you can't enjoy it, you can't build true connections with the guys on your squad, then you're going to miss some of the most important pieces of the whole profession.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So speaking to the women out there listening who are thinking about a career in law enforcement, so if a woman came up to you and said, Carrie, I'm thinking about becoming a police officer, but I'm not sure if I'm cut out for that job, what would you say that they consider first to figure out if it's a good fit for them?
Yeah, the first thing is, well, what makes you say you're not cut out? What is it? What is lacking in them? Or is it a self-worth issue, right? Or did someone tell them years ago, oh, it's for men, you can't do it? And we've now believed this lie, right, about ourselves. You know, what is it that's holding you back? And if it's something like, well, I don't really want to do shifts, I want to have flexibility, I don't want to work holidays, well, then you're right, it's probably not the job for you. I mean, that's kind of a non-negotiable. It may not be the right fit.
Yeah.
But if that's not one of the issues, and it's, well, I'm just nervous, or I'm just, everyone's nervous, right? It's new territory for everybody. You're going to be new. It's like the first day of school. You'll be new with all the other recruits around you who haven't done it before. And when it's hard, everyone who is pushing you, your squad leaders, your FTOs, your sergeants, everyone who's pushing you, they really do want you to be great. I mean, they do. They want you to be an asset. They want you to be a valuable backup. I mean, they're pouring into you because they want that for you. So you just need to accept that. But that's really it, is do some self-reflection. And hey, if you want it, but you already have some doubts, we need to talk about what those doubts are. Right. And are they something we can overcome?
Right. And are those doubts based in reality? I mean, because a lot of things that we believe about ourselves and that we fear are not true.
Exactly. So much of it.
So for a woman that comes to you and says, hey, I know that I was made for this. Like this is the only thing I want to do. What would you say to that person? Just maybe like the top three things that they should focus on in preparation for a career they feel like they know that they want to get into.
Mm-hmm. Why do you know that? So maybe it goes back to their personal mission, right? Why? Okay, that's great. Go for it. You've already got the passion. Mm-hmm. You've already got the love for it. You've already got the drive. So that's great. We don't have to build that up. But why were you meant for it? And okay, if you are meant for it, if this is what I'm doing, I have no backup plan, then now you do everything in your power to be fully prepared. You get into the best shape of your life. So you eliminate that excuse of, well, I couldn't do the PT. If you don't know how to shoot already, you either learn beforehand, which depends on who teaches you, right? You don't want to develop bad habits either. but make sure you're taking it all in, and you know that there will be academic challenges. I mean, be ready to have the night, however long your academy is, 6 months or whatever, to pour everything into it. And that's just step one. But do everything beforehand. When I knew I got hired, it was a couple months. I was still in college when I got hired. Mm-hmm. I got hired in March, and I didn't start till July. I made sure that I could run. I mean, I was lucky because I was a college athlete, so I was already in shape, but I got in better shape. Mm-hmm. I knew, what can I control? I can control that about my performance. So I will make sure that never in that first 6 months or in my career will they say, Carrie couldn't hang, she fell out of a run. Carrie couldn't hang because of this, because that's my fault.
Right.
Right. That's completely my fault. So you want it, good. Commit to it. Now take advantage of the time you have and make sure you are fully prepared in every way that you can control.
Okay. So focus on the things you can control and don't worry about the rest.
Yeah. You're going to learn the rest. And right. Let you know, everything you need to know, at least immediately in a profession, they're going to teach you. That's the academy's job. That's the FTO's job.
Yeah.
But they can't get you in shape immediately, right? Before you have the opportunity to fall out.
Yeah.
They can't give you passion. They can't give you drive. They can't give you any of those things.
Right. Awesome. So speaking of things that you can't control, at least all the time, how do you handle three kids plus all of your professional work and aspirations?
It's amazing. I love it. So I am a huge gratitude practice junkie.
Okay.
And I teach it too. It's everything. I was introduced to gratitude practice a couple years ago, actually, when I was transitioning out of law enforcement. I was lost. I was struggling. There are a lot of personal challenges going on.
Mm-hmm.
And every morning I write down 10 things I'm grateful for, and it sounds so cheesy, but it gives you this lens where I get to wake up, right? Like this morning. Okay. Again, my kids are 5, 3, and 1. So temper tantrums are very real, right? I mean, baby problems, all that stuff. They wake up early. They're grouchy. Man, how lucky am I? I get to wake up in the morning and be home with my three kids.
Mm-hmm.
How amazing is that? You know, I get to work on something that I love, mm-hmm. something that I get to create and help, and I get to show my kids later, right? It'll only be a few years before my oldest comes with me to some of these trainings mm-hmm. and gets to sit in on leadership training. You know, I've created that very intentionally, but gratitude practice is all of it, because it creates this perspective of, man, things are good. Even when they're hard, things are so good. And if you can function and live through that lens, it does everything for your mental health, for your physical health. It sets you up for success day in and day out.
Okay. So I did not expect this question to get into anything this profound, but I think this definitely is. So first, I want to say a gratitude practice is building habits, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is how I think of it, is building habits that help you operate with gratitude, right? Because you just mm-hmm. gave one of them. Every morning you get up, you write down 10 things you're grateful for. So what else do you do as part of your gratitude practice?
I do the same.
Because I'm writing these things down for my wife right now.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I kid, but for me too. So yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, it's, you know, it's part of our family culture. My husband does it. Mm. My kids do it at breakfast. We sit with their journals and they do three things because attention span.
Right.
Yeah, but I also use it, and this is where it can be huge for, you know, those who are listening who are already in law enforcement. I use it when I'm stressed. I use it when things are hard. If I have a rough day, or I've told my kids no 52,000 times before 8 a.m. and I just kind of don't want to be around them, I write out why I'm grateful for them. I mean, as little people, why am I grateful? So when they have a temper tantrum and I'm going crazy, it's, I'm so grateful that they have strong personalities. They'll be leaders when they grow up. Right. I just shift it. It's the same thought process, but I shift it. If I have a disagreement or frustration with my husband, again, it doesn't happen often, but when our marriage was rough, it was, okay, he's driving me crazy. Before I can have a conversation, what are 10 reasons I am grateful to be married to him? And it changes everything. It reduces your anxiety. It lowers your blood pressure. It psychologically and physiologically does all these things for you. And all you're doing is putting pen to paper. It's a tool we all have. We just have to do it.
Right.
It is a huge piece of my morning routine, my mindset practices. It's a huge piece of who I've become. And I teach it to everybody everywhere I go, because it made such a profound difference in my life.
That's awesome. So you actually physically write it in a notebook or journal of some sort?
Yeah, I have a journal. I have lots of them, but I have one on my nightstand. I have one in my office. My kids have their journals, and it's something we do. And if I have to do it again, or if I did it, I'm not feeling grateful. I'm in a negative, you know, slump, right? I'm kind of in a rut. I have negative self-talk, whatever my issues are. I go back to my gratitude, and I literally will write until that goes away. Mm-hmm. Until I correct my mindset. I correct my perspective of, man, things are, you know, things are good. They are. I have food on my table every night, right? I have a roof over my head. It's those things we take for granted. When relationship wise, I have a husband that I get to wake up to, and he actually likes that I'm laying next to him in bed, right? There are people who don't have those things. Mm-hmm. And I think we take all the good stuff in our lives for granted because it's easy to. We forget how good it is.
That's awesome. So for everyone who is listening, if they want to get a hold of you, have you come speak, attend any of your presentations, how do they do that?
Yeah, so I am on all social media handles at Real Carrie Wooten, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, of course, Carrie Wooten. I'm on LinkedIn a lot. And my website is mindsetenterprise.net. Mindset Enterprise is my training company. So reach out to me with a comment, with a message. Email is realcarriewooten@gmail.com as well. You know, and just if you have a question, if you need help, or if you just listen to this, right, and you want to talk about something, I answer all my messages. So mm-hmm. sometimes it takes me a little bit longer, but seriously, I'm here to help. Reach out. I'm happy to help any way that I can.
Awesome. Absolutely. I will make sure everyone has those in the show notes. If you're listening, you're driving, whatever, don't worry about writing it down. It'll be in the show notes. If you want to reach out to Carrie, you will be able to do that. And I hope everyone listening has enjoyed this conversation. Carrie, I can't say enough how much I appreciate your time today, and you were a wonderful guest. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Alrighty, ladies and gents, that's it for this one. Before you go, though, I just want to let you know, Carrie did, she was so kind as to offer our new members on Patreon something special that she has not offered in the past, and that is a free 30-minute coaching call. So if you go over to Patreon, patreon.com, search Police Academy Podcast, and sign up for any of our tiers, it doesn't matter which, and message me through Patreon. Essentially, if you're a member, or if you're not and you become one, message me through Patreon and let me know, hey, I want to get connected with Carrie. I want to do one of these coaching calls. She sounds like someone who can make me better, which I think for most of us, if we're honest, is probably true. I know she could make me better just by talking to her for the past 2 hours. So, like I said, she was kind enough to offer that to our members. So go check that out. Sign up for Patreon, support our membership program. You're supporting something good, and you get all kinds of free stuff out of it. You can get a free hard copy cover of Patrick Fitzgibbon's book. You can get a free coaching call with Carrie. There's all kinds of stuff that you can get over at our membership program on Patreon. The reason I keep telling you about it is because it's awesome, and I know how stubborn I am. If you're someone who has to be told 100 times before you go check it out, I'm telling you, don't wait till the 100th time. Go check it out. Just when you get to a place where you can look it up, just go to Patreon and check our membership program out. You can see all of the things we have to offer on the program. And this is one of the greatest things I think we can offer, is even just 30 minutes with someone who has been there, done that, and is extremely intelligent, introspective, and would be a great mentor for anyone interested in the law enforcement career field and or just improving themselves and their professional development. So go check that out, patreon.com/policeacademypodcast. And with that, I bid you all adieu. As usual, do good, be strong, fear nothing.